All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Off the Cup with Hoppy and Hobbs, new studio edition. Coming at you live from Studio 22 at the Real 22 Studios. That's so awesome. This is so awesome. We are back in studio the first time in months since our studio blew up.
Well,
it literally caught fire and exploded.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable.
But we were able to save all of our equipment and our pop figures. We ran them out of there with our tails on fire.
It's a lot of training, you know, spontaneous, just saving lives.
Spontaneous combustion. Man, it's been a little over a week since the Major League Baseball season started.
It's been nuts. And some predictable stories have happened.
Yeah, the most predictable was the Padres getting a no-hitter.
Everyone knew that was coming. Yeah. You know, but, you know, the Dodgers are doing well. And, you know, there's some injuries and, you know, COVID. But the unexpected has been amazing. You know, I mean, we're just going to jump right into the Padre no-no.
Yeah, let's go straight to
we're just going to do it because,
straight to Joe Musgrove.
53 years and the only organization never to have a no-hitter. And then I'm watching the game, and you're like, okay, he's in the fourth. All right. And then he's in the sixth. And then you send me a text, which I had just seen what the TV network started doing. And if you didn't watch the game, shame on you. But Bally's is the new...
Bally's Sports San Diego.
Yeah, they're holding all the TV games. And they put on the corner Musgrove... has a no-hitter through six innings. And you're like, what are they doing? Who's the guy who goes, hey, this will get people to watch? And that's like it's one of those unwritten rules that we talked about, you know, a year ago on our podcast. And so I have a wooden coffee table. So I knock. And every time the announcers say something, well, you know, he's in a groove.
Yeah, but the announcers were good about it.
Oh, I mean, you could tell they were getting excited, especially in the eighth.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying everything not to say he's got a no-hitter going, but insinuating, hey, everybody, he's got a no-hitter going. So, I mean, they would say something, I'm knocking. Finally, my son goes, why do you keep knocking on the coffee table? I'm like, don't ask. Just sit here and watch the iPad. Knock. Did they say something? Oh, God.
I was exactly the opposite, by the way. I went around my house telling everybody, there's a no-hitter going on. There's a no-hitter going on. You got to watch this. There's a no-hitter going on. The Padres might get their first no-hitter. It's been seven innings. There's a no-hitter. You have to watch it. And then by the ninth inning, there was like seven people in my living room watching. And some of them aren't baseball people, and they're like, well, what's going on? I'm like, there's a no-hitter going on. And then they start talking about something else. I'm like, you can't talk about something else other than the no-hitter. So there's a no-hitter going on.
So you went complete 180.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, yeah. I'm sticking with the, you know, the guidelines here for the baseball gods.
Yeah.
And
I don't believe in the jinx, despite the postings that I did. See, what people didn't realize is I actually posted the jinx.
Yes.
A picture of the jinx happening.
Yes. Right.
Saying that they were jinxing it. So it was like a double jinx. So
like an anti-jinx?
No, it was like a double jinx.
Double jinx.
Like, and for people that didn't get it, I don't believe in jinxes. That's why I posted the picture.
But what's so funny is just everything on TV, everything on the internet, social media, and I'm losing it. I'm like, oh God, I hope this. And I knocked on the wood, because you got to knock on wood at least 100 times in four innings, at least. And then, you know, he throws the no hitter, and I was as nervous in the ninth inning watching Musgrove deal as I did when I won a championship in '98. That last inning, getting ready to run on the field, that excitement. I felt that when Musgrove was pitching, which was for a baseball guy that's been out for a while, that feeling was so awesome. It was so awesome. And, you know, you tie everything back into it, being an East County guy. He's a Padre fan growing up.
That's the
up.
Best part, right?
You know, And his quote was great because it felt like it was meant to be. Like it was supposed, I would do this.
Yeah.
Coming home.
He's rocking Peavy's number.
Peavy's number. I mean, his parents had season tickets.
Yeah.
And you know, that it's such a cool story.
That's the dream when you're playing in the backyard or you're like,
yeah,
you're playing wiffle ball with your friends and you're like, bottom of the ninth, two outs. If I strike you out, I get a no hitter.
Yeah, Joe Musgrove's got a no hitter going.
Yeah.
Playing wiffle ball against his buddies.
Yeah.
You know, it was so awesome. And you see him and he's just like, this is, you know, this is a dream. Living the dream. He did it. And no matter what happens for the rest of Padre history, Joe Musgrove.
Yeah, I mean, even when he doesn't get resigned to come back next year, because he's going to be his contract's going to be so large, and they have Clevinger coming back.
But forever in baseball lore now in Padre's history is Joe Musgrove, and that is the dream.
Absolutely,
that's the dream. So many props. I can't even. I've just been, you know, watching everything. My entire feed on all my social media is Joe Musgrove. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, he had a good day. So let's talk a little bit about Joe Musgrove and his pitching and about his first two starts. Mm-hmm. So he has an ERA of 0, which is good.
Which is pretty good.
He's the number 3 starter for the Padres. Came in with a much higher ERA. Mm-hmm. The thing that I've noticed about Joe Musgrove, and you're probably going to get mad at me, he gives up way too many solid contact. So way too much solid contact. Guys hit the ball really hard off him. So he gets a lot of strikeouts. His breaking ball fools people, but his fastball doesn't really fool anybody, and it gets hit pretty darn hard. Like, there were some really hard hit balls in that no-hitter. There were some really hard hit balls in the first game. And then people are going crazy talking about how he's an ace and this and that. I really think he's in the right spot. He's a 3 or 4 starter, I think.
Yes.
He's giving up hard hit contact. I'm not sure that he's in or hard hit contact. I'm not sure he's an ace, but maybe he could be.
No. Remember, an ace means every time I play that, I'm going to win.
Right. And that's what he's done through two games. Too early based on his career. To say that all of a sudden he's an ace, but I could see him being an ace, maybe, but he's got to start giving up less hard contact with the basketball.
I think you hit it right when you said, I think he's in the right spot. He is a 3 or 4, and he's going to beat most everybody's 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Because his stuff, when his breaking ball is, and when that slider,
the backdoor slider.
Backdoor slider. And then when he comes in with 93, 94, it's by you. I mean, he was blowing balls by Gallo, who eats fastballs for breakfast, and balls were by him because he goes, you know, first pitch thumber, and then he comes back with a good slider, and then he pumps 94, and it's by him. When his pitches are on, he's going to be super, super effective.
Right.
Because he doesn't have that electric 97, 98.
Right.
But he's definitely a guy that, when his slider's on, it's going to be a short day for you.
He is what Chris Paddock should aspire to be.
Exactly.
Because I think Musgrove has a little bit more movement on his fastball than Paddock does. But
it's a different arm slot.
Musgrove's not going to have a 0 ERA for the season.
No.
Right?
No. I mean, and honestly, in this rotation with this team, if Musgrove can be a 500 pitcher, and if we're just the bottom rung, if he's a 500 pitcher, he's doing well for the Padres.
Yep.
If he's an above 500 pitcher, the Padres are doing well.
Yeah, if the Padres win 18 games when he starts, they're a first-place team.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and if you're not much of a base, most starters in your top five get 30 starts. You know, 28 to 30 starts. If you're going to win 18 of those, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Padres are doing well if Joe Musgrove's above 500 pitcher.
And don't get me wrong, he's going to put him in a place to win.
Yes.
I just think he's pitching a little above his ability right now because things are breaking his way, which is amazing. And maybe they break his way the whole season, which would be wonderful. But when you look, I'm guessing if you had the advanced stats and you looked on, you know, hard hit balls, you'd see a little more than a guy that's got a 0 ERA. You'd say that he's pitching a little bit above.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're throwing a no-hitter, nobody's touching you, and you've had two good starts. Yeah,
yeah,
you're throwing well.
But the there were some extremely hard hit balls in that no hitter. Like he even talked about a couple of them. The line drive to Will Myers,
yes,
in right field. The line drive to Cronenworth, I think, in the eighth or ninth.
Yeah, that was in a shift.
Yeah, and it's like those balls were 100+ miles. Yeah, an hour.
They were scorched. But yeah, I mean, let's really be honest. In a no hitter,
that happens.
There's gonna be some great plays. There's gonna be some lucky plays.
Yeah, Kim made a good play.
Yeah, so. You know, a no-hitter truly is a team effort.
Yeah.
You know, unless a guy comes out and strikes out 27, your team has to play behind you. And I think you, not watching him last year, but he gets on the mound, and I know that he doesn't mind letting a ground ball go up the middle or a ground ball to the left side because you've got gold glove guys, you know, all on that field right now, you know? And it wasn't with the Padres' quote unquote best team. You didn't have Tatis out there, right?
Yeah. So you know, let's talk about this. Like, do you have the confidence on a ground ball to shortstop if you're the pitcher, if Tatis is playing short with 5 errors in 4 games? Like, does that no hitter happen if Tatis is playing short? Nobody knows.
Wow.
Like, do they get that one extra batter from the E6 that gets the hit, you know? Like,
well,
is it like everything fell the way it was supposed to fall?
Yeah. I mean, and some of the greatest things that have ever happened, you know, of course, go unplanned. Yeah. You know, hey, we're going to do this. And the guy that you throw in there goes 4-for-4 with 4 jacks. And you're like, wow, didn't see that coming.
Yeah. We're going to talk about one of those.
One of those guys.
A little bit later on in the podcast that's playing for the White Sox right now that wouldn't be in the big leagues if it wasn't for the Jimenez injury.
Right. No, that's a great story.
Yeah.
But as far as the no-hitter went, what I really liked was he didn't even know what was going on until the seventh.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, I got a no-hitter going.
Yeah.
And he goes, that was the toughest 3 innings that he's thrown, because he goes, you know, I threw a lot of pitches, but he goes, I am more mentally tired than I am physical. He goes, just that focus to make sure every pitch, yeah, I didn't make a mistake.
Yeah. And not just that, I heard him talking about Blake Snell, and I don't know if you heard the story that he told about Blake Snell. Blake Snell was sitting a certain way with his feet up on the post in the dugout, and he kept looking at Blake Snell, and he's like, he's still sitting the same way. And he's still, and Blake Snell apparently didn't move the whole game. He sat there the whole game.
That's great.
In the same position, not to jinx the no hitter. And he went up to him and asked him after the game. He's like, were you sitting there the whole way? He's like, yeah, I never moved. I never moved the whole time.
That's so awesome, because, I mean, there's just things that go on in a dugout and in a clubhouse that, you know, that sort of stuff. If he would have never said anything, that would have been just their little story, you know? And I mean, like, so there's tons of things that go on that stay private. But for Snell to just, I'm not moving.
I didn't move the whole game. I sat in the same position the whole game.
Yeah. I mean, even in my living room, you know, my son was sitting right here and he went to get up. I go, no, stay here. My back was killing me because I was sitting kind of weird. I stayed there. Right.
I didn't. I was up and around telling everybody there was a no hitter going on. You got to watch this.
Yeah.
I'm posting the double jinx on the social media.
Well, all I know is it was great for me to actually be part of that and have a memory instead of just looking on social media and going, oh, Musgrove throw a no hitter. I was watching it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was great. That was great.
I was about the fourth inning. I'm like, this could happen.
Mm. Now, I didn't think it, when he got through seven, I'm like, he's got a shot, because his slider was just
But I always start the watch after about four.
Like, that's a long way to watch.
But you get to the fourth inning, you got a no hitter going. There's a chance. Mm. And when he hit Joey Gallo, I was like, okay, he's no perfect game, but he hit the right guy. This is the guy that would get the hit off him.
I'm like, so he didn't have any walks, right?
And he's gonna only bat one more time. Mm-hmm. Like, if this stays like this, I was like, he's got a chance, because you know, the less at bats you give to their best player, the better chance you have of a no hitter. So
right.
You don't necessarily need a perfect game. Drop one on the knee of the best hitter and see if you can get everybody else out.
I wanted to just look, that Padres had no errors.
No.
In that game.
No,
just and so he had a self-inflicted.
Yeah. He could have had a perfect game, maybe, if he didn't hit Gallo.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah. Only faced 30.
That's amazing. Unbelievable.
Or, I mean, 28. My math is not good today.
Good job.
Hey, Studio 22 at the Real 22 Studios. So, Musgrove, no hitter, just in case you didn't hear. It actually happened. Padres. Too bad it wasn't at home, but it looked like it was home with all the brown and gold.
You know what? I actually had friends that made that trip, and they're like, it was just the whole vibe. It almost felt like the Ranger fans were rooting for the Padres to see this actually happen.
Well, the Padres own that stadium.
They do. I mean, if the Padres ever move, Texas is the place to go because they play well there.
Yeah, I mean, even last night before Manny hit into the double play with the bases loaded, he swung
3-0.
He swung 3-0, tried to hit the grand slam.
Okay, so there's just some weird stuff that goes on. For the longest time, there's a picture of or it's a baseball card of Tony Gwynn, and I want to say it's spring training. I had to hit up my Padre resources for this. He has a baseball card where he's wearing number 53. And it was probably like a spring training, whatever. But it's a picture of Gwynn starting to run to second base. Number 53. How many years did it take the Padres to throw a no-hitter? 53.
Ooh.
And I just went, what? And forever, I've, you know, that was like a cool thing. What was Tony Gwynn's first number with the Padres? 53. And then here it is, 53 years later, the Padres get a no-no.
Dang.
It's deep, dying. Isn't it?
That's I think we
deep.
Need to retire the number 53.
That's deep. Retire 53.
Yeah. All right, so we got a lot of Padres stuff to go over other than Musgrove and our 17 minutes we spent on that, it.
Well, you know what? 17 minutes for 53 years, not a bad deal.
All right, so turning to the other most major news of the Padres.
Most major.
Fernando Tatis is out with a torn labrum on the 10-day IL. He's already swinging the bat, I guess, and taking infield. I just want to bring up one thing on this.
What you got?
Isn't it amazing how the person gets hurt on strike three?
Yeah. I mean, didn't really tone his swing down.
No, he had the same exact swing a pitch before when he swung for strike two. And it's always amazing that the people get most hurt when they make an error or when they strike out or, you know.
No one ever gets hurt on the first swing.
People do. They just come back.
You know, but let's be honest. Tatis strikes out. Manny strikes out.
Yeah. Well, Tatis looked like he, when he went down, he looked like somebody threw a pitch inside him. Like, you know how he goes down, like
yeah.
The guy tried to kill him when a pitch comes up and in, and it's complete overreaction. That's what it looked like when he hurt himself on the strike three swing.
Yeah. I mean, I've pulled a muscle on a swing, and it does feel like daggers.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You know.
I've done the same type of swing that he did and almost separated my shoulder. I know how bad that hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes away in just a little bit. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that he was probably upset that they put him on the injured list because he knows.
No, he tried to get in the lineup the next night.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, we're gonna take this easy. And now, last year was a sprint.
Yeah.
This year's a marathon.
But
you want him healthy.
I'm kind of with him, though. 10 days for this injury isn't going to make it any better.
Well, it gives him a chance to rehab it, strengthen it a little bit. You know, 10 days of getting stem and then doing some work.
Yeah, but it's not going to get better. Like,
No. It's if anything, just work a little more stability so that he can continue to have his swing. Now, the question will be, you know, because that was a one-hand high
That's
finish.
That's what they always do. He needs to finish with two hands or it's going to keep doing
it. Yeah, if he does the Hosmer where he's two hands all the way through,
yeah.
I that's going to help.
They'll keep it from happening again.
Right, Right. So it'll be interesting when he comes back if he takes the same swing or if he has a different swing.
But the next time he gets a breaking ball and is fooled and thinks it's a fastball, the same thing's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, hopefully hopefully it doesn't.
Yeah, I know, but it is.
It's inevitable.
Yeah, it's going to. And it's sad, but that's just what you have to deal with when you're a player. Like, it's going to keep happening.
Yeah.
It's going to keep popping out. You're going to keep having to put it back in, and you're going to keep going. And
just like my horrible swing on a pitch down and in, I'm going to foul one off my shin.
Yeah.
But eventually.
Don't act like you're dead.
Yeah.
Because you hurt your shoulder.
Well, it hurts.
It hurts.
You know, I mean.
It hurts, but be a pro.
Yeah, well. Pretty sure he's trying.
Whatever you say.
All right, what you got?
Kim, he hit his first homer yesterday off the foul pole.
He got the best silent treatment
ever. He's like,
yeah. Hey, Manny, I hit a home run.
Did you see that? I hit a home run.
And Manny's just like, nope.
I didn't see anything.
He's going to keep staring out in the middle of the Texas Stadium. Yep. And then he did his own dance by himself.
All right, guys. And then everybody went crazy for him. It was awesome. But yeah, that was great. He didn't understand. They obviously don't have that tradition in Korea. He didn't get it.
Yeah. No. And, you know, good for him. I mean, it's.
But did you see his face? He was
happy.
Excited.
He was happy. He's like, I hit a home run for the Padres.
He's like, Manny!
Hey.
It's like, Daddy, I did it. Did you finally see it? I might be batting 200, but I hit a homer.
I hit a homer.
I told you I could do this.
Manny tried to play that off so good. I said, nope.
I told you I could hit a home run. I told you.
I swear I had 30 last year.
I can hit 29 more this year, I swear.
Yeah. Now, you know, what's good is he hasn't been, you know, how do I put it? The expectation on him has been to be better. It's to be better. But what was he brought over for? You know? Yeah, he wasn't brought over to be the starting shortstop.
He was brought over to play second base.
And this guy named Cronenworth is pretty good. Finds his way in the lineup every day. And he's tearing it up.
Let's not talk about the weirdness of the lineups for the Padres. Yeah.
whatever it is, honestly, it's working.
It is, but as a player, it's really nice to know where you're going to bat and you can prepare every day the same way, because you know when the nine hitter's up, you know you're X amount of at-bats away from hitting, so you can mentally prepare. And when you're doing, when you're second one day, seventh the next day, fourth one day, ninth, leading off, sixth, it's really hard to be a consistent hitter.
Yeah.
You're asking me to be consistent when nothing around me is consistent. It's hard.
Well, you know, as a pretty much lifer of utility player, like I was, you know, you never know coming to the ballpark. One, are you going to play?
Yeah.
Two, if you do play, what position?
Yeah, that's different, though.
You know, but
that's your role, right? So when your role is not to know and to do your best when you get a chance, that's different than when your role is you're playing every day and you got to prepare like you're playing every day. We're just not going to tell you where, when, how.
Right. And no, that can be tough.
That's a little tougher.
But I think that mentality has kind of taken over for a lot of ball clubs. I mean, you can look at the Cubs, the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers 7-2, they're on the brink of a sweep of the Nationals. They haven't even played Betts and Bellinger. I mean, they got guys like Chris Taylor, you know, who was a bottom rung guy that came to the Dodgers, and all of a sudden he's all world. You got guys over there doing weird stuff. The Padres, Padres have taken that model.
But the difference is when Mookie Betts is in the lineup, he knows where he's hitting.
Yeah.
He's not batting first, second, third, seventh, fourth, sixth, second.
True.
Like when he's in the lineup, he's batting second.
Yeah.
You know, or
it changes your bats depending who's in front of you and who's behind you. You know, and I think that consistency, because once you get through the lineup once, it doesn't really matter.
But once you know, like, so and so's batting ninth and I'm batting third, and I know I can prepare a certain way for that third spot to come up. And when you're batting second, sometimes you're like, oh crap, I'm batting second. I got to get ready because the nine hitter just hit.
Yeah.
It's just because you, when you're, at least for me, when I was hitting, I prepared myself based on where the spot was in the lineup I was. And when I jumped around, like when I was batting, if I was batting fifth, sometimes it felt like, oh my gosh, it's way farther away than mm-hmm. from the leadoff spot than when I was batting third.
Right.
Right. And so, like, okay, the leadoff hitter's up. I'm up in two. Okay, I'm ready to go. I get my batting gloves. Mm-hmm. I get my stuff ready. Yeah. I'm ready to go. When I'm batting fifth, it's like, I got to wait till the third hitter's up to get, or the right. second hitter's up to get my stuff.
No, I get it. And I get it.
And it just changes the timing of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It also changes the way you're supposed to hit in your spot.
Right.
And I know today, I don't know if they really care about how it changes the way you hit in your mm-hmm. spot, but when you're really playing the game, the two hitter and the five hitter don't hit the same.
No. And I've been in that where, you know, in college I hit six. That's an RBI spot. I'm there to drive in runs. When I got into the pro ball, where I was most successful was in the two slot. And my job was to get that leadoff guy in a scoring position and let 3, 4, 5, 6 knock him in. So my at bats were different.
Right.
And then when I batted at nine, my job is to get the leadoff guy up. You know, battle, grind, and, you know, get on base somehow.
Yeah. Make him use as many pitches as he can.
Those were three different mentalities. You know, fortunately, you know, when I was in the two, I stayed in the two. When I was in nine, you know, that's the eight and nine. Those were basically the same mentalities. I didn't fluctuate in pro ball from two to nine, and I never hit in the six.
Yeah, but if you talk about two to nine, batting in the first inning versus batting in the third inning, it's the right. preparation is so much different.
It is. It's completely different.
Like how you have to prepare to face the pitcher. Because you're going to maybe see four pitches before you bat versus seeing mm-hmm. 30.
Yep. See if he's got his good stuff.
Whether you're the person that they're talking to about the at bat instead right. of the person saying, that you're hey, talking to the guy about yeah. what the pitcher did, right?
Yep.
So it's a whole different mentality.
It is.
So when you're Manny Machado and you're batting second, third, and fourth,
like, yeah.
or you're Profar and you're batting leadoff ninth, seventh, sixth, second.
Yeah.
Or you're Cronenworth and you're batting seventh, eighth, second, leadoff, right. you know, fifth. Like, it's hard to prepare.
Yeah. And you wonder, what kind of data are they really getting and why are they doing that?
Well, they haven't had the same lineup twice, I think, the whole year.
No, I mean, they've had some injuries and they move guys around.
But they haven't even tried to have the same lineup twice.
Right.
It's just like, oh, it's out the window.
I don't know. I mean, I would be a big fan of if you did Tatis, Cronenworth, Machado, Hosmer, Pham, Myers.
Yeah. And you can talk about Pham's struggles. It's like right now he's looking like a 8-9 guy. Although he did sting a couple balls in the game yesterday.
Yeah.
He looks almost disinterested, even though, you know, he's not.
No, he's. It's weird to say. It looks like he's pressing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's still hitting the ball hard, but, I mean, he hit into two double plays last night, but both of them were stung.
Well, and the ball rocketed one to right center, too.
Yeah.
It's the same as Manny Machado. He was hitting the ball so hard. Even when he hits into double plays, the ball's hitting 95-plus miles an hour. Yeah.
But it's still early. I mean, we're today's game 10.
Yeah.
You know?
So, just kind of digging back in on the Padres, I comparing Victor Caratini and Campusano, you can see the difference in catching style and yes. experience.
Mm-hmm.
Caratini is definitely an experienced backstop.
Like, yes.
He knows how to call the game. He sets up late
mm-hmm.
like for the pitchers, and he's not doing that new one-knee style of catching.
Right.
And it's really working with the pitchers that he's working with. You see Campusano back there. He's doing the one-knee style of catching. He sets up every single time with his glove at the waist of the batter right down the middle.
Mm.
Or he sets up about 5 seconds too early on the inside or the outside corner.
Right.
Like, you could steal his location all day long. And it makes me wonder if that's why a couple of the pitchers that he's catching are struggling. Like, I feel like if Caratini was catching Paddock would be better.
Right.
I feel like if Caratini was catching Snell would be better. Mm-hmm. And I am really looking forward to Austin Nola coming back. And because I think the pitching staff is going, the starting pitchers are going to be better because Camposano still has a lot of learning to do behind the plate.
Yeah, it's definitely an easy depiction, which one's the veteran, which one's the rookie. This guy knows what he's doing. This guy's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, he's really trying hard
to catch.
Yeah, he's not Mejia. He's not bad at all. He's not bad. You can just tell the difference in experience.
Yes.
And then because of that, you can tell by the success of the pitchers that he's catching.
Mm-hmm. It would be interesting. The guy's put together. He's strong. He's got a good arm.
No, he's Tatis behind the plate, man. Yeah, he's gonna hit the same way.
But is he a guy that you go, you know what? Let's put you in a corner outfield. And just say, you know what, screw all that other stuff. Just go play the outfield.
I really think he's a Piazza that in 2 years he's gonna hit 25 to 35 home runs and bat like 270 to 295. And they have to give him the opportunity. He wouldn't be in the team right now if it wasn't for the injury.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. He's playing because somebody got hurt and they don't have anybody better.
Right.
And he needs to get his at bats and get his experience. And I think you're gonna see flashes of how great he can be. But he's just not ready right now.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of those players that this COVID thing has totally screwed him.
Yeah.
Because a full year at AAA, playing 100 games, being behind the plate every day.
Yeah, he just needs that experience.
He needs that. And, you know, it's unfortunate for him because he truly is learning at the big league level the toughest position on the field.
Yeah, he needs the little nuanced things that make you a little bit better. Like, If I was in the opposing dugout and he was catching, I would be stealing location of every pitch.
Yeah. Well, you know, you hope that, you know, that staff will say, you know, look what's going on here. How come that ball got hit so hard? You know, we had him set up perfectly. Well, Camposano set up, you know, way early. Look at the runner second, you know, lean in or whatever. Given location, that guy was on it.
I just yell it out of the dugout. Hey, he's throwing inside.
Yeah. Yeah, we know you. If they're going to give it to me, I'll take it. Yeah. So, but I mean, he is a guy that, you know, has so much upside.
Yeah.
It's really, this sounds weird. It sucks that he has to be at the big league level learning this instead of being down at AAA and playing every day.
Right, because truly is about wins and losses at the big leagues, and he's catching Snell every start that Snell's making, like a Cy Young award winning pitcher. So
well, you know, he's maybe Snell's like, I want Camposano because I want you just to focus on those hitters and become the Caratini.
Well, no, he's learning at the highest level. Like he's catching a Cy Young award winner, but we're not seeing the same frustration we saw from Kirby Yates and Mejia. Like,
right.
This guy can't even catch my pitch.
My split. Like,
I'm going to throw a split finger. It's going to go to the backstop, and we're going to lose the game. That's what you saw in Kirby Yates' face. You're not seeing that when the other pitchers are throwing to Camposano because he's not Mejia, but he's going to get better.
Like, yeah.
And you can see it. And he'll probably be a better defensive catcher than a guy like Mike Piazza, but I think he's going to hit like that eventually. Yeah.
Well, and comparing those two again, Caratini is calling the game.
Yes.
Camposano is suggesting the game.
Right.
Like, hey, what do you think about a fastball here? Instead of fastball.
Yeah.
So, he'll get there, you know, but the Padres with Caratini behind the plate are such a different mentality, you know, as far as receiving and calling the game. I think those. Well, you saw it with Musgrove.
Yeah. And just for you people that are cool and love the podcast out there and don't understand why Caratini didn't catch the day game after the night game, you do realize the game started less than 12 hours after the other one ended.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was an 11 a.m. start, right?
Yeah, I think it was like a 1 o'clock Thursday after 11 o'clock at night finish. They usually use the backup catcher in the day game after the night game.
Yeah.
No matter who it was, if Austin Nolan was the starting catcher, Caratini would have caught that game.
Right.
Just to save everybody.
Just a few optics that we give here off and off.
Yeah, that's just something that normally happens. One really happy surprise for this year is Jerks and Profar.
Yeah.
He came on strong at the end of last season, better than he's ever hit in Major League Baseball, and across his multiple seasons with multiple teams. And he started this season out. He's still batting over 300. He's playing first base, left field, pretty much anywhere that they throw him. But he's established himself as a starting player.
Well, I think he's established himself as a guy you can rely on.
Right. So, and that leads to his super nice contract the Padres gave him with, I think, 3-year contract, $5 million a year, I think is what it was, but opt out after every year. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's playing towards that opt out. And when we're out of Texas, they're going to have to make a decision on who plays left field.
Ooh, man.
You want the guy that's hitting 350 plus, that's getting on base and has a smile on his face, or you got the guy who's batting 200 that's hit 300 in the big leagues but can't throw?
Yeah. Man. Well, I don't think Profar is going to be the one who gets sent down or whatever.
Well, he's not getting sent down, but who's going to start in left field, or do they just give somebody a day off every day and have Profar play their
position? Yeah, I think that's what you do. I mean, you've seen they can do that with Cronenworth, give Hosmer a day off.
Dude, they put Profar at first base.
Yeah, I mean, the ground ball to get the no-hitter was Kim to Profar, which if you were to write that script, it would have been Tatis to Hosmer, not Kim to Profar.
Yeah.
And, you know, but Profar, I mean, he gets it. I mean, he's here in San Diego. He's happy.
Right.
I think the reason why he's playing so well is because he is happy. He doesn't have to try. And as much as I talk about, you know, giving 110% and all this stuff, when you're playing, your job is to relax and just play. When you're trying to hit, you won't hit. When you're trying to pitch, Paddock won't pitch. When you just go out and let your abilities go, well, that's what Profar's doing. That's what Cronenworth did last year. They just went out and played. There was no pressure. There's no pressure. You got Tatis and Manny and Darvish and Snell. I mean, Grisham is playing, you know, gold glove caliber. He was released. And we got, you know,
essentially. Yeah, he was traded because he made an error in the playoffs.
And, I mean, here he is. He's showing how many home runs he's hitting, winning gold gloves in San Diego. Like, this is it's a game.
Yeah, let's talk about how cocky that guy is.
You know what, though? But if it works, and it does, keep doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got the swag and you're still going, then just go with it. And that's what he's doing. And Profar, hey, I play for the San Diego Padres, the most exciting team in the big leagues. Let's go play some games today, guys. Let's go.
Yeah, the problem is next year they might have to re-sign him and Musgrove. They're both going to get big money if they both keep doing the same thing that they're doing right now.
Yeah, you know what, though? I really think that both those guys, I know Musgrove, this was a dream come true.
Absolutely.
He's going to take a San Diego discount. I guarantee it. The Padres will take care of him. But
the Padres aren't a small market team anymore, so they should be able to afford another $20 million contract, right?
Why not?
So it's not my money.
Yeah, I'm really good at spending other people's money.
So this is off the cup question right here.
Uh oh.
Off the cup.
Okay.
First National League ballpark after the series in Texas, because I'm not looking at the schedule to see who they're playing next. Do you start Profar or Pham in left field?
Pham.
That's funny, because as much as a Profar hater I am, I might have to start Profar.
No,
if it's a right, I might have to platoon. I might have to only start Pham against lefties.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing is you can do that, because Pham, he competes. Those aren't wasted at bats.
No, he works hard, and he'll get the off the hand single.
Yeah.
In the clutch moment.
But, I mean, again, a lineup has to have a mentality, and there has to be a certain quote-unquote fear from that pitcher going, I can't make a mistake. Profar will hit, but also that pitcher facing Pham, there's a different mentality facing FAM than there is facing Profar. Right,
because you know you can strike out Profar and FAM, although he has had a couple of 9-pitch at bats lately.
Yeah.
But you feel like you can strike out Profar. FAM is a lot harder to strike out.
It's a tougher at bat.
Yeah.
And the good thing is even with that mentality, Profar's being successful. FAM, like I said, FAM just brings a different attitude to his at bat. And he grinds his at bats. The Padres again are grinding. They're leading the league in walks again.
Oh, they take their at bats are long.
Yeah, and you're like some of it's even frustrating because you're like, oh, 2-0 is right there, and the next thing you know, the guy he works at the full count, he fouls up two or three pitches, and then you look at the pitcher's pitch count in the fourth inning, he's got 55 pitches
or more
or 65 pitches, and you're like, God, man, they're just grinding these staffs. And again, this is a marathon now.
Yeah, that helps you win game three of the series.
Yes, right? It does. It helps you because you're not trying to win every game, okay, folks? You're not trying to win every game.
You're trying to win 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4.
You're trying to win the series, 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4. And you do that over a course of the season, you're gonna have 90-plus wins and be a playoff team. Not every game. I mean, yes, we put a lineup out there that's going to give us a chance to win. But if you don't win, your job is just to win that series. So, you know, these at-bats, getting into a bullpen in game one or game two of a series, that's your goal. Because then the more you see a guy, well, you're going to wear him out. Eventually, you're going to wear him out.
Yeah. And then after everything, they're saying Lamet might be back for the series in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
And they just, like we were talking about, I think on the last podcast, he could just roll into the rotation as the sixth guy because they don't have any more days off for a couple weeks, and then just kind of give everybody a break.
Yeah, or you go, 3-3. Say you go Lamet and Marejon for six.
Yeah.
Right? And then you go to your bullpen.
Yeah. Or you could do 3 innings of Weathers every 4 days.
Which, you know what? That guy, man.
Yeah, he finally gave up his first run last night.
Yeah, but I just, again, there's the mentalities of pitchers, and that guy just goes to work.
Yeah, and now he's throwing like 96.
Yeah.
And from the left side.
They showed a picture of him in the dugout, and he's just locked in. He's watching the game. He's not all toweled up and doing other stuff. He's not pitching. He's watching the Padres hit. Okay, got to go back out. I mean, the guy goes to work, man.
Yeah, and they're like, "Wow, you can throw multiple innings in a close game."
Yes.
we don't need our pitchers to go 7 cuz we've got Weathers.
Yeah.
We can have a guy go 5 innings once a week or twice a week because we got Weathers to come in to throw 2 or 3.
I mean, he's your long guy.
And that's going to be Morihone. So if you think about this, like if you just throw Lamet into Morihone's spot,
right?
You've got Weathers and Morihone that can go 3 innings or 4 innings twice a week.
Yep.
You don't need a bridge.
Yeah. And then you're also saving your bullpen.
Yeah. You got 2 long relief guys and Stammen. They're using Stammen as a 3-inning guy.
Yeah, the KG vet, I mean, keeps going out there.
Hanging sliders,
but
baby.
I like when you're trying to look at the full season, you've got options.
Yeah.
You've got options.
They really did a good job building the team.
Yeah, they did.
So speaking of building the team, the White Sox did something interesting. So they have this guy named Eloy Jimenez. Who went down with a monster energy. And an injury. And so they brought up this 27, 28-year-old rookie named Yermin Mastaides, who was never going to get a chance to play in the big leagues, right, for the White Sox. He was not going to make the team. Makes the team because of the injury. Goes out and goes 8 for his first 8. 8 for 8. The first time in the modern era that anybody's gone 8 for 8 to start a season.
And what kind of 8 was that, though?
A legit 8.
A legit 8.
And at one point, I believe he was like 15 for 27, and he's hit the longest home run of the season. He hit a home run 485 feet. 485 feet for a guy that wasn't even supposed to be on the roster. How good are the White Sox?
Man, whoever drafted him and saw whatever he saw in him, Because you've never heard this name before.
Never. And you would have remembered it because his name's Mercedes.
Mm-hmm. you know what he reminds me of is another East County guy, Shane Spencer. When Spence came up with the Yankees,
yeah,
he was absolutely on fire.
Yeah.
Bombs. They were calling him the Natural because nobody had ever heard of Shane Spencer. And the next thing you know, he's in Yankee Stadium hitting bombs. That's what that reminded me of. But this guy took it to a whole new level of, I'm just not going to get out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hit bombs.
Just so you know, I'm going to own you.
I'm just never getting out.
Yeah.
You come up into the big leagues and you're hitting bombs, and now he's hitting, you know, still 500, something like that.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And that's what I love about this game is you can predict everything, and something amazing that you never thought of is going to happen.
So that'll lead into my next player.
Ooh, segue.
From the Tigers. What city are the Tigers from?
Detroit. Detroit.
What?
Detroit.
I love the way you say it. Akil Baddoo.
Uh-huh.
Okay. 2 years ago, Tommy John surgery.
Yes.
Comes back last year. Shortened season, stuck at the alternate site the whole time. Twins think nobody is going to pick this guy up, so we'll leave him off. The Tigers come in and pick him up in the Rule 5. Kills it in spring training. Goes out in the big leagues. Hits a home run on his first pitch.
First pitch in the big leagues. He goes opposite field yammy. Unbelievable. His parents are in the stands. It was awesome.
Then game two, he hits a grand slam. And throws a guy out from the outfield mm-hmm. with his Tommy John repaired shoulder.
Yes.
And then Elbow. He gets a walk-off hit in the 10th inning of his next game.
Unreal.
Rule 5 pick.
Yeah.
If they don't want him, they have to give him back.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to give him back?
Hell no. Are you kidding? This guy.
This guy's not supposed to be in the big leagues either. He's a Rule 5 draft pick.
He's... You know, you get opportunities, and either you take them or they send you back. And he,
awesome.
I think he's done a good job of taking the most of his opportunities right now. And these stories are great.
Did I mention that the guy he threw out to the plate and got the walk-off hit was the Twins? He did it against the Twins.
Even better. You know, I've played against a former team of mine, and all you want to do is just absolutely shove it right in their face going, hey, thanks. Thanks for, you know, not believing in me. So, yeah. And the good thing is he's going to play with a little bit of a chip. And obviously, you know, to do that to your former team, that's a
rule five pick. Most rule five picks are like sitting on the bench, watching the game, waiting to be sent back to their other team because they screw up.
Or they stay up in the big leagues for a certain amount of time, then they send them to AAA.
Well, they can't. They have to stay the whole year. So they just basically either get like one at bat a week, or they're the guy that comes into pitch when they're losing by 7.
Right.
You know, just so they can keep you and put you back in the minors the next year. You know?
Yeah, they don't work out like this, though.
No. Congratulations, man. I mean, he turned himself into a starter, and he's making a difference in the big leagues for the Tigers.
And for a team that is looking for a spark.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that gets fans in the stands,
yes,
man.
Yes, it does. I want to go see this guy.
All right, so speaking of standings, which we mm-hmm. didn't. We talked about stands. Let's talk about the too early in the season to predict the season standings.
Yes.
Because there's some good stuff going on in the AL East with the Red Sox in first place and the Yankees in last.
Yes.
Even though they're only separated by two games, first and last. The Red Sox and the Orioles are the top two teams in the division.
It's nuts because, you know, I've got buddies of mine that are with Baltimore. And if you would have said, hey, your first week, you're going to be 500. You're going to be in second place. That would have caused a chuckle and say, oh, yeah, and the Yankees will be in last. But, you know, geez, just if you look at the divisions, it's every you know, it's 10 games in. But yeah. Everybody's about the same.
You get to the Central, 8 games in. They're all separated by 2 games, too, with mm-hmm. the Twins in first and the Indians in second, the Royals 500, the White Sox 500, Tigers pulling up the rear. The AL West is a little bit different. You got the A's and Astros at 6-3 out front. You got the Athletics 3.5 games out already, which is not good after 10 games. But with how bad they started the season, being 3-7 isn't so bad, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, depending upon who you play and how you start your year, you know, you could win 30 games or lose 30 games, right?
Yeah.
So you get that hot team in the first week and you lose four games, you know, it could be pretty bad. But the Angels and the Astros and the Mariners sitting at 500, that's not bad.
That's a shock.
And the you know what the shock to me is after watching the first two games with the Rangers is that they're 3-5.
Yeah.
Because they're not great.
No, I mean, other than Gallo, I mean, there's where's that thump? Where's that, you know, that stretch of three batters that I don't want to face?
Yeah. I think the other surprising thing is we move to the NL. The Phillies in first. The surprising part, the Nationals 1-4.
Yeah, you know, they got 11 guys with COVID protocols right now. Corbin makes his start last night. Didn't look good, but he was just activated that day and flew out from Washington to start that game. They still got Bell and Schwarber. Those guys, they haven't played. You know, so they'll come back. Hopefully, the rest of that division beats each other up to where they don't get so far behind that you're chasing all year, and that'll wear on you.
Yeah, and then the other disappointment there is the Marlins after such a great season last year, starting out this season at 2-6.
Yeah. Well, did you see the walk-off hit batter?
Yeah, drop my elbow into the strike zone. Let me drop my
elbow in with bases loaded, full count on a strike. Leans over, gets hit. Umpire says, hit batter.
He didn't have the guts to make the call.
And then they even reviewed it, and they go, nope, run scores, game over.
Didn't have the guts to make the call, and then had the guts to come out after and say he messed up.
I want to know who's running the replay.
But
probably someone who never played.
Didn't have the guts to make the call. The NL Central, the Cincinnati Reds rolling out 6-2 and taking control over the Cardinals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pittsburgh is going to be Pittsburgh. Milwaukee is 500. Chicago's 500. Honestly, neither one of those teams are hitting right now.
Yeah. But let's give it up to the St. Louis fans and on the Colton Wong situation where they gave him the standing O when he came back to play. That was pretty amazing.
You want to talk about emotions, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
that dude gave everything to St. Louis and the fans paying him back like that.
Well, I mean,
awesome.
They say, you know, people talk and go, St. Louis fans are the best fans in baseball because they get it, you know.
No, he didn't want to leave.
No,
and
no.
The fans are like, we didn't want you to leave either.
That was,
But that's what happens in this game.
And it's hard to hit when you're crying, you know. And showing emotion.
Come on, that's easier. You got water in your eyes. You can see everything so clearly.
but Cincinnati 6-2.
6-2, baby.
That's a shocker for me.
The Pirates right where they're supposed to be, 2-6. The NL West with the Dodgers on top by a game, but the surprising team in the NL West has to be the Giants.
Yeah.
Longoria is raking, even though he looks very old.
Yeah. Well, you know, they got Buster Posey back. Yeah. You know, he took the last year off. I mean, he had a kid, and so he's back. I mean, he's old too. But, I mean, that's a veteran.
Longoria just looks old. I remember a couple of times in the Padres series, he was sitting in the dugout, and they just brought the camera right up to him. I'm like, oh, my God. I remember when he was the guy that just started
in Tampa. Yeah.
He was the man, and now he's the old guy.
Remember, he only played like half a year, and they gave him a huge contract. You're like, whoa. Yeah, and now he's in San Francisco. Yeah, he's raking. Buster's doing well. That, you know, that swag of the Giants. I don't know. We'll see if they can run it for a whole season, but
they're veterans, man. They're veterans. And even though, I mean, you got Brandon Crawford there that doesn't make errors and comes up with clutch home runs and belt clutch home runs. Like, they just have a veteran team. And if you want a team that can grind it out, it's veterans, man.
It'll be interesting to see what direction San Francisco goes, because almost all those guys are done after this year. Their contracts run out. They're not going to get re-signed by the Giants. They're going to have a ton of money to go out and restock with young free agents. There's going to be some interesting names that end up wearing Giants jerseys in 22.
But in the too early to tell standings, they're a game and a half behind the Dodgers at 5-3 after 8 games.
Yeah.
There's not many more games to go. There's only 154. There's only 154 left.
Yeah.
And the Rockies and Diamondbacks have actually done better than I thought because they both have 3 wins.
Yeah.
I didn't expect them to have 3 wins. But what's up with the NL West playing more games than everybody else? That's
well, I didn't do the schedule.
Messed up, except for the Giants who have one less game. But
yeah, no, I don't know. It's going to be, yeah. I just looking at these standings, I think the NL West is going to pretty much be about the same the whole year. I think you're going to see that, you know, with San Diego and the Dodgers staying close. I don't see the Dodgers running away with it. But I think that order is about right.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Blake Snell and Yu Darvish haven't done what... I mean, they've done great, but they haven't done what they're being expected to do.
Yeah.
Snell's still throwing too many pitches. He's missing up and away a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets back in the groove, they get Lamet back.
The Padres could put a really good run together. To where you're going... You know, in a 12, you're going 10-2 in a 12 game span.
And the Dodgers are the same. Like the Dodgers, they're just good.
They're good.
They're just
they're flat out. They got depth. They've got pitching. I mean, Urias got the win last night as a starter. You know, he's the guy who closed out the World Series last year.
And they have the guy that could have been the Padres manager if the Padres wanted him.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think the Padres got the right guy right now. Grand scheme of things, Tingler's not the manager if Dave Roberts is.
Yeah, well, the Padres play sloppy, but they just play, right? It's like, okay, guys, go play.
Yeah.
There are way too many guys getting thrown out on the bases, way too many guys getting, you know, making errors. Like, they're sloppy, but they play.
They let them play.
Yeah.
They let them play.
Their at bats aren't sloppy.
No,
their pitching's not sloppy, but their defense and their base running, they're taking the risks.
Yeah, but that's the difference.
Yeah,
and I like it. I would rather you get thrown out being aggressive than being passive and missing out on an opportunity where you could have had second and third, but that guy didn't advance. You know, or whatever. I like putting pressure on defenses.
Yeah, they've been able to overcome some of the mistakes because they've been playing teams that aren't as good, but you've got to be a little more careful when you're playing better teams because you can't expect to hit, you know, 2 or 3 solo home runs to get you back in the game when you had 3 guys thrown out at third base.
True. But I still like the idea of it's not just us going up and hitting and going station or what.
No,
sometimes
you
got to take that chance.
But you can't get 2 guys thrown out at third and a guy thrown out at home and expect to win the game.
No.
Not against a good team.
But in the grand scheme of things, I would rather be known as a loose, aggressive team.
Oh yeah, you're
than
gonna force
a
the
passive station to station.
You're gonna force the other team into making errors eventually. Right.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point.
But you're only gonna force the middle to bottom teams into making those errors. You're not going to force the Braves into making those errors. You're not going to force the Dodgers into making those errors. You're going to force the Rockies and the Diamondbacks. And those are the games you have to win.
Yeah, you got to win those games.
You need to finish 500 against the best teams and win the games against the bad ones. But if you go and you get thrown out at third base twice and at home once in a game against the Dodgers, you're going to lose.
Yes, you will. That's foregone conclusion right there. I don't know. Like I said, I like the idea of, hey, we got to be on our, we can't.
I'm with you.
When you're, yeah.
As a first base coach, I mean, I'm taking second on the ground ball to left when the guy's just dragging up to the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I play. But you got to be careful at third and home.
Yeah. No, and
because you don't get those opportunities in scoring position, right? I'm trying to get a guy into scoring position, but you got to be a little bit more careful when you're playing the good teams when you're already in scoring position.
But then again, too, you know what? I'm gonna test you.
Of course, you have to.
I'm gonna test you. I'm gonna see if you can do it, and I might do that early in the season.
Right.
You go, hey, you know what? I'm going to put some pressure on.
That's where we're at.
On these guys.
And you got to find out what your guys can do in a pressure situation, too. Yeah. If they're going to step up and be able to get that extra step between second and third to score, you got to find out if they can beat that throw, if how fast they really are. Can your catcher really go from second to home? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to find that out.
Yeah.
You know, you have to find out if your second baseman can go from first to third on a base hit to right field, mm-hmm. you know, and next time you might have to think twice because yeah. you know he can't do it.
If I can make that defender think
yeah,
instead of react.
I saw Hosmer went from first to home, I believe, but when he rounded third base, he rounded so wide that I probably wouldn't send him again, even though he was safe
mm-hmm.
because he took so long to get from third to home.
Right.
So unless the ball's rattling or you got a really, really bad arm in the outfield, I probably wouldn't make that again.
Right.
Like if I was coaching third, but just because I saw how he took the he didn't cut the corner.
Yeah.
He just like went, what?
Well, when you think of Hosmer, you don't think of base running.
Right. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't know how to run the bases.
True.
Because when you're not as fast, but, you have to learn the little things.
You at least you put that in somebody's head.
Yeah.
You know.
Now he might go. So now
the pressure's on the defense. Now I have to make a good throw. Relay has to be good.
And now the guy goes from first to second because Puig's playing right field and he throws it all the way home without hitting the cutoff man because he's afraid Hosmer might score.
Right.
So you get an extra base.
Yeah. So I like that mentality. Stay with it. It's working.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Hop.
Yeah.
Great job in Studio 22 at the Real 22 Studios.
Yeah.
First day here. I hope you guys enjoyed it in the new studio.
Yeah.
Episode number 37 of Off the Cup with Hoppy and Hobbs.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So what time is it?
Yeah,
no. It's time to knock over the pop figures.
I guess it's time to sign off. Put that one there, folks. We're out of here.
Woo!